Hey, good morning and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research as we watch Austin make a mess over here. I just told him it's easy.
Absolute mess out of myself.
There's a kitchen about 20 feet away.
I just sat back down. We're back and running. We're Monday, guys. it's Monday. I got Fit Food chocolate running.
Ever since that day when I spilled it everywhere, I don't do it anymore over here.
It's Monday. We're good. We're rolling. Guys, if you need anything, healthmasters.com. Here to help you out with the latest supplements and world nutrition, health news, and every other topic in between. Hope you guys are staying strong and healthy today.
I want to talk about Osama bin Laden.
Osama bin Laden? Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about Natokinis for 1 second here, since some products of the week.
I want to talk about Maduro.
Now, how does Natokinis and Osama bin Laden tie together?
There is no segue.
There's no segue on this one. We'll be sure you guys check out the product of the week, the Natokinis.
No. Got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I got the segue.
If
Maduro basically is in prison and he's locked up with not getting enough water, his blood's going to get too thick, he'll need Natokinase to help dilute the blood to make it so it flows easier through his arteries.
What if we can get a government contract to give him Natokinase and make sure he stays alive and healthy?
Yeah. If it was government, we will charge him $100,000 a bottle.
Oh, of course. You know? Why not $1 million a bottle?
We'll pay it. Why not?
I mean, heck, while we're at it, we need to set up a daycare.
Daycare,
yeah,
for Maduro,
Somalian daycare. It was like, we made millions of dollars having no kids at a daycare that doesn't exist. So check it out, guys. Natokinase, great product. Read more about it. We talk about it all the time on the show. Be sure to check out the best sellers as well on the site at healthmasters.com. Bring you guys the highest quality supplements we can possibly make. If I could make him better, I would. Now, where were we going with Osama bin Laden?
Okay. Osama bin Laden. You know, he's in a cave in Afghanistan. That's simply not true.
Allegedly. Yeah.
No. And all of a sudden, SEAL Team 6 goes in, and they basically abduct him. They take him out of his cave, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, he dies in custody as they're bringing him back to the carrier.
They give him a water burial.
And they give him a water burial.
Yeah, from the helicopter.
Now, there's no proof. There's no DNA. There's nothing. It's just, this is what we were told.
Right.
And I told Sharon when that happened, and my deepest condolences to the team members at SEAL Team 6. Oh, yeah. I told her, I said, swift boats. You know what swift boat is? Those are rubber boats they used to use up the rivers in Vietnam.
Yeah. Okay?
And John Kerry was a swift boat captain.
Yeah.
He ran for president a few years ago. And what happened is the guys who ran the swift boats with him basically came out and did a bunch of ads about what a lowlife he was and how much they hated him. I mean, the guys on the boat with him basically decided they wanted to go ahead and, you know, and not allow him to become president of the United States because he was such a lowlife.
They started hammering him.
Oh, they did. They did public service ads. They actually did commercials about him. And all of a sudden, John Kerry didn't have a snowball's chance in perdition to become president of the United States, and that was the end of it. Well, the problem is that when they had SEAL Team 6 go to the White House to be congratulated, you know, they've got a problem. When you have SEAL Team 6 officers, these are the officers, they're all super smart. Most of them are probably high-functioning geniuses.
Oh, yeah.
And they're in incredible shape, and they're trained to be officers and gentlemen. Okay, these guys are. This is the best it gets. SEAL teams are, you know, Rangers. All these parts of the military which are specialized to the point of being almost Übermenschen. You'd call them supermen.
Yeah,
I mean, they train, they eat, they work, they're smart, they think. They basically don't want to sit around and lie.
No,
they don't have to lie.
No, the real ones don't.
They most of the time you can't even talk about what they do.
No,
because they don't want to talk about it because some of it's pretty
half stuff still classified.
But all of a sudden, I told Sharon, I said, SEAL Team 6, these guys are basically pretty much dead. And she goes, what do you mean? I said, well, they can't keep them around because of John Kerry's swift boats. Because if somebody suddenly breaks and says, hey, you know, this didn't happen.
Or didn't happen the way we said it did, or we did something completely different.
Then all of a sudden, it's going to be one of those things, we got witnesses now. And now all of a sudden, the people that are involved are culpable. Now, obviously, you have firsthand. We see, when you're a firsthand witness, that's a problem for you as far as from a how long are you going to live standpoint. Because you can actually testify before Congress that you saw something or you were involved with something that they're lying about. If you just hear about it from somebody else, that's secondary information. That's just hearsay. It doesn't mean anything. They can discredit you. But if you're there and you're one of the ones involved, they can go to jail because of you. And so they've got to get rid of you. And sure enough, a few weeks later, you know, I remember we were in Norway.
Chinook, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had a helicopter go down with them. And I don't think it was a Chinook, though.
I can't remember.
But it was a long time ago. And what ended up happening to them, they were killed. The bomb went off inside the helicopter at the SEAL Team 6. And my deepest condolences to the family because that was very real what happened. But the reality is those boys will never testify now.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's another 20 years, they're not going to testify. This is the problem they run in with the USS Liberty. They didn't kill everybody. When they basically put 5,000 rounds of ammunition to the USS Liberty back in 1967, they still had a bunch of the guys on the crew. They were shocked. They were still alive. And they've come in now. They've done a whole bunch of videos and a bunch of interviews. In fact, I'd love to have one of them on this show and interview them. I really would. And you think, well, what's that going to prove? Well, it's going to prove that there are people out there that we think in the Middle East that are our friends that are not our friends that are being run by the synagogue of Satan. This is what the Bible calls it twice. So now we come back here to Maduro. Maduro and Trump have been in negotiations for the past several months now as far as his surrender. That's been in a bunch of news stories. We've posted the stories and we've talked about it. And he does not want to have happen to him what happened to Saddam Hussein. Nobody wants
or Gaddafi.
No one wants to be hung. And so the reality is that they've been working with him now for a surrender. But how do you make the surrender a wag the dog kind of moment? You got to make a big moment with it. You got to have, over the other day, a big transport plane flew over Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a military aircraft, troop transport plane flying over Mar-a-Lago. Just for fun. Just for show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a friend of mine who was there. He was working with Mossad and Secret Service there as far as protecting somebody that was there.
Yeah.
In fact, it was, I'm not going to tell you who it was. That'll be breaking confidentiality. But the reality is, it's like, let's show you what we can do with this troop transport plane. We're going to come in here nice and low and kind of fly over nice and slow and just to prove a point of who we are and what we can do.
Yeah.
Well, then all of a sudden, you know, we go down there and Maduro is captured. Now, let me explain something to you. This guy had an army, a standing army of almost 500,000 people, right? You know, he's going to be unbelievably covered up with security and machine guns, machine gun nests, anti-aircraft, and everything else. This kind of reminds me of when the Iron Dome was turned off and hang gliders flew into Israel and dropped a bunch of, you know, hand grenades.
Yeah.
You know, and we're supposed to sit here like, you know, we're, you know, lumps on a log and believe everything we're told, like we're a bunch of mushrooms sitting in the dark and somebody shoveling us piles of feces.
Yeah.
Good morning. It's Monday. And, you know, and so I had my friend who was there, you know, at Mar-a-Lago. He goes, oh, we have two of the guys from the raid. They're in intensive care. I said, how do you know that? They told me. I said, who told you? He said, Mossad told me.
Oh, yeah.
I said, why would Mossad know this? Mossad? Yeah, first of all, let me explain something. Mossad are trained liars.
Disinformation is one of their key they're tools.
They're specialists in that. They're trained liars. So anybody who'd believe anything that Mossad said, and they're good at it. They're really, really good at lying. They're really good at killing people, too. Mossad is probably the best Secret Service kind of group, you know, like CIA, MI6, that you're ever going to have working on your side if they're for you. But the problem is you can't trust them because they're going to lie about everything. Just mentioning that to you. And, you know, so the reality is do I think that basically Maduro was captured by our forces that went down there in a helicopter and overthrew his 500,000-man army? No. I think Maduro wanted to give himself up because he's got billions of dollars, in my opinion, stashed in offshore accounts. And he just wants to go on with his life and not be, you know, in the same fate as, you know, Osama bin Laden or Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. So I believe he wanted to be taken prisoner. There's a meme out there right now with him with the DEA officials. He's going like this, like, yeah, we did it. Now, whether or not it's really him or not, I'm sure it's Photoshop.
AI is everything now.
But the point is this. Could there have been a real military operation going down there to do this? Yes. Do I think it happened? No. Do I think he gave himself up voluntarily? Yes. Do I think that, you know, I mean, him and his wife were taken out of their bedroom and hauled off.
Well, the whole purpose, though, this entire thing is, you know, Israel has deemed it so they got to take over the oil reserves. The biggest thing is not, and then they're talking,
the Rothschilds.
They're talking about strategic aspects as far as, you know, with what's going on with controlling oil with China and reducing stuff. Here's what has to happen as well. Venezuela had the largest, here's a photo right here on a full spectrum. Venezuela has the largest oil reserves out of any country in the entire world. I mean, beats Saudi Arabia, beats Iran, massively beats Kuwait, Iraq, every country. Massive, absolutely, staggeringly beats every country. And what's happened now is the oil industrial complex has not been controlled enough and cornered into the market in order to get the EV market to expand. The EV market, the entire purpose of the EV market, if you remember when they started pushing it back in 2000 and COVID, they had to do all these different subsidies on it. And also, too, they started running oil price and gas price to the roof at the pump. the only way to get this to actually go through and force everybody in these electric EVs and these just crap vehicles is you have to be able to push the oil prices up higher and higher and higher. And so now you're going to have Exxon. You're going to have all these companies now, Mobil One. They're all going to come down there. They're going to put more infrastructure in. They're going to dump a bunch of cash into it, and they're going to corner the market again, which is what they've done. Because essentially these groups control the entire narrative. So I told you guys for the longest time, that's what the whole reason they want to go down there. They want to have more control over infrastructure expansion with the oil. The more you control the oil reserves, the more you can control the markets, the more you can manipulate them. Just like we saw with eggs. Suddenly, there was a giant bird flu. 2 years, bird flu.
We kill 15 million chickens.
15 million chickens dead at the end of it because we're nasal swabbing chickens. You can't even make this up. Beak swabbing chickens with PCR tests. That's literally how they did it.
Yeah, small nasal swab, boy. Jeez.
One chicken tested positive on a PCR test for bird flu. The entire million flock you have has to be basically incinerated. And, of course, they ran the egg prices up to $10, $12, a dozen. Then they figured out what the market would bear, what the ceiling is they could push. When the sales started to go down, they said, okay, we'll drop the price now so we can keep the sales maximized and the profit maximized. This is what they've done with every single industry. This is how they manipulate the markets on it. Oil is no different, and that's one of the biggest things, in my opinion.
You know, when I was talking to my friend who's down there working with Saad this past weekend, you know, he's arguing with me about everything. Now, he's the same guy who believed that the Iraqi dinar, because he bought a few of those, was going to make him a billionaire.
Still, he
believes that to this day.
And that's a long flim-flam fairy tale.
You know, and I told him, I let's call him Joseph. His name's not Joseph. But I said, look, Joseph, here's the deal. You even said, you know, years ago that you were going to become a billionaire. I mean, you were going to be worth hundreds of billions of U.S. dollars because you bought some Iraqi dinar. And I said, notice that never happened. He goes, well, you don't think it's going to be revalued? He still said it.
The Iraqi dinar already had its time when the Central Reserve Bank got put into place in Iraq. Let me explain this to you guys.
These guys made money on it.
And they made money on it right at the threshold. It was the banker boys that made a ton of the cash after we invaded Iraq, took over the infrastructure, put it in the Central Reserve Bank, and controlled the oil infrastructure. That did happen. But what happened was it had a big spike, and the Iraqi dinar did revalue, and there was a big profit that was made on it for an extremely short period, and it was mostly insider knowledge. What happened was all that information continued to trickle down and turn into this giant fantasy tale. They kept telling them, oh, buy this Iraqi dinar, buy a million Iraqi dinar, it's going to turn into $10 billion when it revalues. That time already came and went, and it wasn't public knowledge when it happened. It leaked out afterwards, and everybody thought it was going to happen again. It's over with now.
No, it's just more stuff. And by the way, the Venezuela acting president now, because they said this was a law enforcement event to arrest a drug dealer, not a military.
That's exactly right. That's why they had DEA photos.
Okay. But Venezuelan acting president is now blaming the Zionists for Maduro's capture. How about that? Delcy Rodriguez, the vice president of Venezuela, is now serving as acting president. She accused Israel of orchestrating the U.S. operation that led to the capture of the former leader, Nicolas Maduro.
There you go.
Speaking, this, by the way, this is a Drudge Report. This isn't some obscure thing. Speaking at a televised address alongside senior figures from Maduro's inner circle, Rodriguez blamed the Zionists for the events surrounding his arrest, echoing familiar rhetoric used by Venezuela's Chavista leadership to fault Israel and its allies for international pressure on the regime. The attack on Venezuela was undoubtedly Zionist in character, Rodriguez declared, offering no evidence to support the claim. She reiterated that Nicolas Maduro is the only president of Venezuela, despite his transfer to U.S. custody and a ruling by Venezuela's Constitutional Court appointing her interim president during his absence. Venezuela's leadership was repeatedly invoked Israel and Zionism during past crises. Now, we also talked about this a few weeks ago when he basically said Maduro said it was Israel doing this.
Yep.
Now you think, well, how come Israel has so much influence on everybody and everywhere and everything? It's because that they're the fiefdom of the Rothschild banking cartel who control the central banks and the money supply and thereby control commerce globally in all these different countries. The power that Israel wields on the United States and on other countries because of that is unbelievable. Now, then you throw in Jeffrey Epstein, who was Mossad, who basically worked with basically blackmailing a bunch of senators and a bunch of congressmen and a bunch of judges and a bunch of elected officials from all over the world, including members of our own, you know, parliament and, just, you know, and you know, House and Senate, to basically have them with young girls, you know, 10, 12-year-old girls. And they basically have come in now and blackmailed all these people. Now, the good news is the information from him is going to finally, you know, stretch out to a point that these people are going to retire, Austin. They're not going to be around anymore because it's going to get some of this stuff's 20 and 30 years old. The problem is some of these guys have been in the Senate and the House for 20, 30, 40 years. The other problem is this. The operations that they do like that haven't stopped. They're still blackmailing people. And so it's not going to be an end of this until we put an end of their influence in Congress and we start getting dual Israeli citizens out of Congress. We start to stop, we reclassify AIPAC as a terrorist organization, and we stop allowing them to fund campaigns against opposition people. Until we do that, it's not going to make any difference. It's going to continue to be like this over and over and over because everybody's scared of them.
Well, here's a big factor. I talked to two of my buddies that came over last night. They brought their boys over. The boys were running around having a little Nerf war in your backyard. They had a blast. You got a lot of oak trees. They need some cover and concealment. I said, you guys are weapons free. Have fun. Don't shoot an eye out. Anyways, we talked about it. And I said, here's the issue we're going to run down here in Florida when DeSantis is up. Is AIPAC has already made it very clear that they are only going to support whoever is the strongest Zionist candidate for Florida. We already have an individual that's coming into place that basically is going to be running on the Republican nomination, apparently, as I've been reading about him. Harrison sent me a bunch of stuff on him.
Who is he?
Yeah, I forgot his name. I just read
about
him.
It's a weird name, isn't it?
Yeah, he is absolutely, completely against pro-Zionism in the state of Florida. Mm-hmm. He thinks Florida has way, way too much, I guess Israel has way too much control over Florida as far as what's been going down here. A lot of things have been happening behind the scenes.
But always remember, the Jews out of Miami, sorry, Jews in Miami,
that's what it is.
They have a lot of money.
They have a lot of money.
And they put a lot of money in the campaign.
And so we're going to see what's going to happen down here in Florida, because the last thing we need is some giant meth head homosexual Gillum like that individual as the, you know, governor of Florida.
What do you think about DeSantis' wife, Ron? Do you think she'll do it?
I don't think she can pull it off.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think she has enough credibility with the, I think a lot of people would follow it because of DeSantis. The problem with it is she doesn't have enough she doesn't have enough public perception.
Not enough street cred
with everybody. And just because she's DeSantis' wife, I think that'll get her some pull. The problem is they do that. What's going to do is a lot of people may vote for her, but it's going to pull from whoever else is in there.
Well, that's the one thing that I don't care for about DeSantis. He's so pro-Zionism.
And I remember,
Zionism is a political party.
Exactly.
It's like the Republicans, the Democrats, the Libertarians, the Zionists. It's not, when you say Zionism, it's not being anti-Semitic.
No, it's not. They try to use that term and coin it as anti-Semitic.
It's not.
And my entire premise is this: it's America first and it's Florida first.
Yeah, I mean, we go into Venezuela. I mean, what happened to America first? I mean, a lot of the MAGA people are really upset right now.
Well, here's the point.
We put Trump in to stop all this.
Well, yeah, and I've told you guys for months this was going to happen. I've said for months it was going to happen. The thing about it is ironic to me, right, is we can take the largest military force in the world, the United States. We can surround a country. We can blow up boats that are running dope. We can put 8 aircraft carriers around the entire country. We can run an operation to extract this guy out of his home. But we can't seem to find a single person that was directly involved with Epstein or his running girls. Can't seem to find anybody. FBI says nobody was trafficked to nobody. Epstein was the only person involved with anything. Now they come out and say, oh, by the way, even though we've missed the deadline, we have another 2.5 million pages of documents now that we found that now have to be redacted and released. Really? Really? I mean, it just came out again the other day.
Who's going to sit around and read that much
stuff?
Well,
no, it's total BS. What they're doing is they're flooding the market with nonsense. They're flooding the market with fodder that doesn't exist. It's not even real. I personally believe, in my opinion, a lot of stuff they're producing that's redacted is just theater.
Remember that one movie, Dark Waters?
Yes.
Remember that? And he subpoenaed the information on what was going on with fluoride and with Teflon.
They sent an entire room, like half the floor from DuPont. They came in, okay, you want all the papers? Here they are.
Yeah.
Tens of millions of documents.
Pages, yeah.
And then he finally got into one of the things and didn't even realize what they had sent him.
Yeah.
They basically sent him the smoking gun.
They overwhelmed
from like the
60s. Him. And he sat there for weeks.
Oh, months.
Yeah, going through
months. Yeah, he was going through. That's a true story on the corruption with DuPont, by the way. Incredibly good film. You need to watch it. And, that's exactly what they did. And so what they're doing now is they're overloading information from Epstein intentionally to basically just make everything so clouded you can't figure anything out.
Let's drop it back a notch. Let's talk about World War II.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Rockefeller, Rothschild, petroleum refineries that were owned by them in Nazi Germany.
Yeah.
Germany had developed a protocol on how to take coal and turn it into fuel oil and gasoline and everything else. It had never been done before, and they had the patents for it, and they had the refineries that could do it, and they were basically refining a lot of stuff in Germany, and they had literally, in today's money, it would be hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure that they had paid for. When the Allied bombers came in their B-17s and other types of aircraft to bomb Germany into rubble, They did not target anything owned by the Rothschild Rockefeller industrial complex that was basically refineries.
That's a fact.
Now, you think about that for a second. If you're trying to cripple a country, you want to take away their fuel supplies.
Immediately.
And so you take...
Yeah, that's what you
and
do.
The same thing happened with Maduro. They didn't go after the fuel. Because, you know, the money that has come in from these big investing companies like the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, et cetera, they paid for all that stuff in Venezuela.
And oh, well, Exxon. Exxon's got a huge stake down there now. And ironically, I mean, you look at Exxon. Exxon's up... where are we at here? Exxon's already up 10% today. Overnight training. It's going through the roof on it.
And you think about it for a second. You've got all that refinery capacity down there. A lot of that oil now is going to China. That's all going to come to a screeching halt. And suddenly, remember, China's controlling the silver market, and now we're controlling their oil supplies.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we did to Japan in World War II.
Go back and forth.
Well, remember, before we got into World War II, Franklin Delano Roosevelt had an eight-step point that he implemented that would force Japan to attack the United States and get into World War II, because he wanted to be in World War II, but the people in the United States did not want to have another World War. It was only 20 years since the doggone Versailles Treaty. They didn't want to deal with it again. They said, that's enough. We'll stay out of these wars.
And they've already said, now, multiple reports I've read is that Chevron's going to have probably the biggest impact down there as far as getting a lot of the oil, getting the infrastructure rebuilt. And, of course, it doesn't take a lot to see who the top three investors are in
Vanguard's. And, you know, Vanguard, State Street, and BlackRock again.
Well, it's once again. So you realize what's going to happen down there. You understand what they're going to control and massively, massively expand the oil infrastructure for the United States.
Well, it's the largest oil reserves in the world, and we now control it.
And
the United States controls the country.
I would love to be, you know, really positive and say, well, it's going to bring oil down to $1 a gallon. Or oil fuel down to $1 a gallon. It's never going to happen.
We're never going to see $2 a dozen, you know, organic eggs.
No, it's because they realize what the market's willing to bear. They could take maximum profitability right to the edge and see how far they can push it.
Well, you know, it's like chlorine for swimming pools. I mean, I've got a swimming pool. It's like a giant cement pond. It's awful. It constantly leaks. It constantly needs maintenance. And the crazy part about it is it constantly leaks chlorine, you know, because this is Florida. You have to have chlorine in the pool or it goes green. And all of a sudden, two or three of these chlorine manufacturers blow up during COVID. They just blow up for no reason. They just blow up. We don't know the reason or whatever happened. I have no idea. I'm not going to speculate on that. And suddenly, chlorine prices double and triple. Well, guess what? They found out that people who have chlorine requirements in their swimming pools have an inelastic demand curve. They have to pay for how much the chlorine costs no matter what, or the pool goes green. And then the Marsite gets damaged or the Pebbletech gets damaged. And so there's a certain point where you're going to have to pay for it. And so now they found out where the market will lie, where they won't have all the pools turn green, and where people have to take more and more and more of their money. It's unreal to me how expensive stuff is now because they're all owned by BlackRock,
right.
State Street, and Vanguard.
And understand this, and I was talking to Jeff about this week because, you know, he's a retired airborne ranger, and, you know, he knows a lot of stuff as far as on the backside of this. And he said, also understand, Austin, he goes, this was pretty much a mandatory thing we had to do with Maduro. The dollar is collapsing. Look at silver and gold.
Mm-hmm.
Silver and gold is going through the roof. We've got to maintain the petrodollar. Now the petrodollar is going to be unbelievably strong again with the United States.
Because we're running the petroleum out of Venezuela.
So we're going to have massive shift again to maintain and stabilize the dollar for another extended period of time. Everybody realized in the last 2 months that the dollar was collapsing at a rapid pace we have never witnessed. When you watch gold and silver, I mean, gold, silver was 160% growth last year alone, and that was only in a couple months.
And that's a true number for inflation, and that's why food is going through the
roof. That's exactly right. So the only way to restabilize the dollar and get a baseline again and stop it from dropping is we had to basically control an entire segment of the world's largest oil reserves. Now we do. Trump came out yesterday and he said, hey, we're going to control Venezuela for the next couple months. We're going to completely and totally control and operate Venezuela. It's our country now. He said that. Okay.
Well, now he wants to go after Greenland. Okay.
Yep.
He wants to go after Greenland, and he wants to go after Cuba. He wants to go after Colombia. He's already threatened Mexico. And now, because he's threatened these other countries, and he just did this. All of a sudden, everybody who basically he's threatened now just got snapped tight.
That is a fact.
And snapped tight, that's a chalk line.
Yeah.
You pull a chalk, you got a line that has chalk on it, you pull it real tight, and you pull it real tight, and you snap it tight.
When you're doing,
draw a line.
Especially when you're setting block.
Yeah,
everything stays on that line. So you have a straight wall.
So the whole world just got snapped tight. That we will go in using our Rothschild regulated groups of people that basically
and a massive military
and a massive military, and we can just pretty much take and the Treaty of Versailles from hundreds and hundreds of years ago, which gave national sovereignty to countries, especially during Civil War crises, in which you weren't allowed to invade them unless they asked you to help them. You know, during a Civil War, the Treaty of Versailles just went out the door.
Yeah.
There's no longer an international rule of law that matters. Now it's who's got the biggest stick.
And the fastest jets. It says right here, this is the article going on gold and silver. It says they believe the surge in precious metals is not merely speculative, reflects a deep structural change in global finance. Tight physical supply, de-dollarization, and rising distrust in government finances are converging. He goes, we are not in the first or second inning. We are in the first or second inning of a nine-inning game. This is a long trend, with silver breaking multi-decade resistance and physical premiums emerging across global platforms. They argue these moves signal a fundamental repricing of monetary assets rather than a temporary blow-off. This is why we had to go in and immediately get control of Venezuela. And the dollar was falling fast.
And remember, the Rothschild banking cartel is in charge of the world currencies, including Exchange Stability Fund and all the rest of it that works that way, and, you know, international monetary funds. And they're looking at it from a de-dollarization standpoint with the BRICS coming in and starting their own currency.
That's exactly right.
And they're coming in saying, we got to stop all this. So let's go ahead and get Russia out of Venezuela. Let's get China out of Venezuela, because they're trying to set up their own separate currency funds. And so we can stabilize the petrodollar. Now, from that standpoint, they are kicking the can further down the road. It's going to prevent massive hyperinflation, hopefully, in the United States. So
it's going to the dollar stabilized immediately this morning. Everybody's pushing into all oil down the U.S. dollar again. That's why gold and silver is kind of flat. They picked up a little bit, but they flattened out this morning. So you're probably going to see the metal market stay pretty steady right now. You may see a little correction, but you're probably not going to see those massive spikes that we saw over the last month, with silver going up $8 an ounce in one day.
Well, why don't we say it like this? Let's say the president comes on the TV and goes, look, we got a real problem with drugs coming out of Venezuela and Colombia. We got a real problem with, you know, what's going on with the petrodollar and the inflation in our country and loss of people feeling that the dollar is safe as a secure investment.
Yeah.
We had to come in here from a narco-terrorism standpoint because we're being undermined by, you know, Venezuela, and we had to stabilize the government. And that's why we took Maduro out. Why don't we just tell the truth? Why don't we just say, hey, look, you know, our Rothschild banking cartels that control our refineries and control everything through BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, they've deemed it so that they can't stabilize the dollar, so we have to stabilize it and help them
stabilize the petrodollar.
So we're trying to make sure the United States doesn't go into massive hyperinflation and go the way of the Weimar Republic. So therefore, we have decided to step in and stop the narco-terrorism and the destruction
of the
dollar.
And take over Venezuela.
Well, that's a lot more believable than we're going to go get him out of his bedroom.
Well, no, it's a lot more believable than the crap they were coming out with 6 months ago. Venezuela's a massive fentanyl producer.
No, they're not.
They had no fentanyl production anywhere in the country. They've already established it. Oh, well, they're running drug boats. Okay, we're doing airstrikes. Oh, now we're going to stop the drugs from this and that. Okay. Oh, now we're taking over the entire oil. Like you said, if you're going to do it, if you're going to be the biggest boy on the block with the biggest guns, just own it. Stop gaslighting everybody. That's my take on it. Anyway, I got a bunch of other health stuff I want to cover here today.
Health stuff's coming up next.
Health stuff. A lot of stuff going in here covering vaccines. I'm going to cover stuff on magnesium today and a few other very important health topics that I want to get into that I was working over the weekend. You guys know the article I brought up last month, the deeply troubling higher mortality rates detected in vaccinated 3 months old compared to unvaccinated infants. And I discussed this article in detail. It said this, depending on which vaccines they received, vaccinated children were 74% more likely to die than unvaccinated children. This is a horrible number.
It's horrible.
They're showing here as far as the increase of sudden infant death syndrome grows almost exponentially.
We've known this for over 40 years, by the way.
And we talked about it for years. And now it's interesting. The CDC came in, remember last month, and said, we're dropping the Hep B vaccination recommendation. The only time we're recommending Hep B at birth is if the mother is Hep B positive, period. Well, it's ironic now, and this is the funny part I want to bring up here, is the hypocrisy with some states. You know, during COVID, the CDC turned into basically the United States is God with a little g. Nothing to be like God Almighty or Jesus. But the CDC was like the all-knowing God. Everything they came out with.
Fauci.
It was. If you don't agree with me, you don't believe in science because I am Fauci. I'm the leader of the country now. I'm like, dude, shut up. I remember going to the stores. It's a CDC mandate. It's a CDC mandate. CDC mandate. Wear a mask.
No authority.
Wear a mask. It's a CDC mandate. I'm like, dude, shut up and stop talking to me. I'm not bothering you. Don't bother me. The more you talk to me, the closer you are spreading your nastiness to me. Just go away. And so what's happened is now the CDC was like all-knowing everything. Well, now it's funny. Now the CDC is being restructured. They're actually questioning different things because they're putting personnel in there that actually are bright in some cases. And they're saying, we do not think the hepatitis B shot needs to be used on infants at birth if the mom's not HEPB positive. Newsflash. Well, now states are saying, nope, we're not listening to the CDC now. We are recommending the HEPB shot be used at birth regardless still. Alaska and Rhode Island are among multiple other states now telling residents that the HEPB vaccine dose is strongly advised for newborns and they will continue to give it to mothers unless they request that they don't want it. Alaska, what is going on? You guys are an awesome state. Rhode Island, I don't know about all y'all up there. But Alaska, well, I mean, and they're not backing it with any purpose. They're saying it's standard medical procedure. That's what we're doing. Health officials are still stating that a dose within 12 hours to infants born basically is mandated. So the CDC says it's not necessary. The CDC recommends not doing it. But Alaska and Rhode Island go, no, we're still going to mandate it on the charts. Every single child gets HEPB shot.
That's their right, by the way. The state's right. I don't like it, but we don't have the right from a constitutional standpoint to force these states to do what we
should. You're right, but this is why I'm bringing this up from the hypocrisy that happened with COVID. Suddenly COVID happens and CDC says it's a statewide mandate across the entire United States. Everybody has to wear a mask.
Beta test, baby. Well, it was.
So which one is it? Does the CDC have the right to mandate masks across all states? Or they have a right to tell states they don't have to do this vaccine? The truth is, they don't have an ability to do anything. All they are is an alphabet agency that is there to do center disease control, look at research, and put out basically different types of topics.
Put out bulletins.
That's it. That's the whole point that I got so mad about during COVID when they started saying, this is CDC mandate. It's another mandate. It's another mandate. I said, mandates aren't laws. It's not ratified by Congress. This has zero ability to be enforced in any state. And people argue with me until they're blue in the face.
Well, the problem is, I mean, if you live in one of these states, they're going to force you to inject a child at birth. They want you to move out of that state.
Yeah.
You have that right to just leave. You don't have to get a permit. You don't have to get a visa. You just go to any other 50 states. You don't have to live there. And that the problem is that, you know, a lot of people have a lot of properties, et cetera, in Atlanta, or you could always just do this.
Go to Montana.
You could go to Montana or you go to another state and have the child get birthed.
Yeah.
And then, you know, wait a while and go back to where you want to go back to, and or just stay away from the medical doctors.
Yeah. Use a midwife.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that's crazy to me is, and I've learned this, I mean, I've got friends that are hypochondriacs. Hypochondriac says on his tombstone, told you I was sick, you know? But I have friends that every time they go to the doctor, there's something else wrong with them.
Well, if you allow them to, the medical industrial complex will find something to treat you on.
Well, I'm not saying don't go to the doctor, because sometimes you've got to go to the doctor. Sometimes you've got to get help. Sometimes your health may depend, your life may depend on it, especially if you have some type of trauma inflicted, like an automobile accident or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
you've got to go. You've got to get checked out. You got to make sure you're okay. But the reality is, some of these people, it's like, oh, my nose hurts, my finger hurts, my toe hurts. And every day it's another
thing. My throat's sore.
I'm going to go and have a full body MRI scan from toe to head to everywhere. And I'm going to do that every 6 months just to make sure I'm okay. You know, just chill out for a second. If you feel great, maybe you just need to leave yourself alone.
Well, this is one of the reasons why we've had for years now such a horrible problem with antibiotic resistance in the United States. Because so many people go to the doctor every time they got a sore throat, every time they got
antibiotics.
Stiff nose. Antibiotic, Z-Pak, another antibiotic round. The truth is, run the vitamin C, keep your D3 levels high, and zinc. The three products we put together for years, it's been tried and true, that works amazing to keep your immune system strong. Speaking of drugs in the pharmaceutical industrial complex, common diabetes drug pretty much blocks all benefit of exercise.
What?
Metformin, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pancreatic cancer.
You guys are going to love this one. Metformin is now the go-to drug for managing diabetes. Listen to this. With nearly 86 million Americans filling prescriptions.
That's a quarter of the population.
Do you realize how many people that is?
Quarter of the population, yeah.
However, a new study suggested metformin may prevent you from getting any benefits from exercise. Doctors have long advised patients with high blood sugar to take metformin immediately, believing combining it with exercise will prove therapies to lead to better results. What's so crazy about this, they said researchers at Rutgers University found that metformin reduces the benefits of exercise on blood vessel functions, fitness, and blood sugar control. The study published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism involved 72 adults at risk for metabolic syndrome, Syndrome X, a group of conditions that increase the likelihood of diabetes. Participants were divided into four groups: high-intensity exercise with placebo, high-intensity exercise with metformin, low-intensity exercise with placebo, and low-intensity exercise with metformin. Over 16 weeks, researchers measured changes in blood vessel function, which helped deliver oxygen and nutrients. Results showed that exercise alone improved response to insulin, meaning blood vessels were more sensitive to insulin, allowed more blood flow to muscles, helping blood sugar after eating with just exercise and no drugs. Exercise alone also reduced patients' inflammation and fasted blood sugar levels. However, when metformin was added, these improvements were reduced. They were reduced. So metformin had less of a health impact on blood sugar and blood insulin as far as insulin sensitivity than exercise alone. They said exercise is crucial for lowering blood sugar and improves physical function, both important goals in diabetes treatment. However, they showed everybody had a more negative response when they took metformin than when they just exercised. Imagine that. The drug causes more problems and reduces the benefits of what you're trying to do. The cinnamon extract and berberine have been two of the best stacks we've ever used as far as going with blood sugar. We've talked about it so many times on here, and the reason why is because it uses natural supplementation, natural nutrients to get your body's blood sugar under control.
Natural control helps healthy blood sugar.
Cinnamon extract and berberine, you can read about it. The berberine's five times the bioavailability of normal berberine, supports healthy blood sugar levels, insulin function, enhances fat metabolism and weight loss dramatically, reduces carb cravings, improves cellular energy, and the best part about it is you don't get all the negative side effects from metformin. It's not that hard. It's not that hard at all.
Well, you know, metformin has also been linked to pancreatic cancer for years.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even get into that. We didn't even touch that topic yet.
Yeah, unbelievable.
But I mean, when you start looking at here, when they look at the research, this drug has more side effects and reduces all the positive things you do. And
look at this. Metformin partly blocks parts of the cell's energy centers. It's called
mitochondria,
which reduces stress and improves blood sugar. It stops it.
Didn't you say the other day, once the mitochondria dies?
You die.
You die.
That's how we all die. We stop producing ATP.
Yeah.
Through the mitochondria.
And so you start taking a drug that basically is shutting down your mitochondria, which is essentially killing you, to get your blood sugar under control, and you're exercising to try to have extra benefits. Metformin is blunting those benefits from the exercise, so you're not even getting the benefits from it. Wouldn't it should be easier to stop eating so much junk food and throw in the berberine and cinnamon extract?
Well, you know, the problem is most people don't want to change their diets because that's how they live their whole lives. I mean, I had a friend of mine years ago who basically, he worked with this naturopathic physician, and he had pancreatic liver cancer. Yeah. And he was a junkaholic. I mean, he lived on pork, he lived on sausage, lived on hot dogs, lived on all this stuff, and he ended up going on a healthy program to try to, you know, help combat the fact that he had stage 4 pancreatic liver cancer. And before it was over with, he ended up reducing, he ended up testing negative for cancer, but he refused to eat and starved himself to death. You think, well, that can't be possible. The heck it's not. I saw it happen. I mean, people have a certain thing. They get used to eating a certain way.
Yep.
And because they eat a certain way, they develop certain types of diseases. The problem is their mind, their psyche basically wants to eat this way. It's like alcoholics. You know, people basically, they get addicted to alcohol. They want to drink. They want to drink with every meal. They want to have a glass of wine with every meal. They don't pay attention to the fact they're gaining, you know, a pound every 2 weeks. They don't see that. They don't see a function that change. They don't get their liver tested to find out if they have liver enzyme problems because of the alcohol. And they just keep drinking the wine because it's healthy. I'm going to drink wine. Biggest lie ever. Oh, God. And the problem is we had a Christian doctor years ago wrote a doggone book about why you should drink wine. Total nonsense. Wine's not healthy. It increases the risk of pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, alcoholism, osteoporosis, and breast cancer. And now people, here's my segue. Ready for the segue? You ready? An aversion to alcohol is moving the global party scene in an unexpected direction. People are going to raves now. Listen to this. This is great. You know, it said on a Saturday morning in October Park, Joe woke up at 5:30 going to a rave. Okay. Instead of shimmying, this was what Joe, it was Joel. Okay. Instead of shimmying into a miniskirt, the 29-year-old pulled out a pair of running tights. Instead of slipping her feet into a set of precarious heels, she slipped into running shoes. And in lieu of hailing a cab to the party, she ran from the apartment to the venue, arriving at an hour-long 5-mile jog, ready to hit the dance floor. It's just random people who met for the first time, but we start dancing together. It becomes crazier as time flies by. In other words, they're no longer going to the raves with drugs and alcohol. They're going to the raves that are basically
cardio.
Cardio.
That's funny. I love it. Something positive.
Well, no, I know of a girl, a woman. In fact, I know her well. She's an extended family member. She went to one of these raves about a year ago, and they gave her some drugs. Her and her boyfriend both, and they went into cardiac arrest. Both of them literally flatlined. And she ended up going to heaven. I'm not making this stuff up. And the crazy part about it is she came back and then she remembered what had happened. And she said, I'll never, ever go take drugs from somebody again that I don't know who they are. It probably has some kind of fentanyl. Who knows what was in it?
That's what, man. Don't do drugs, first off. Definitely don't do drugs at raves from random people. My gosh.
No, but people are finally starting to realize that the drugs and these raves and doing these things and these partying, this constant staying drunk, it doesn't have an outcome that's positive for any reason whatsoever. You go out there and you get kind of promiscuous and you get some kind of, you know, transmitted diseases and all the rest of it. And plus you're blowing out your liver, you're blowing out your brain. I knew of another woman who she used to go to these things with her husband, no less. And she ended up getting hooked on crystal. Was it Molly? What's that called? That's the,
Ecstasy. Molly. Ecstasy, yep.
Yeah. And her whole dopamine center was shorted out.
Oh, that's horrible. Fries
no,
your
no, receptor. She was crazy as a loon. I mean, there were like three different personalities. You never knew who you were going to get when you talked to her. She's super nice, super mean, or super crazy. And you think, what the heck happened here? You can't take these drugs on an ongoing basis and not affect your body. Same thing here. Now you see with metformin.
Yeah.
You got all these people taking these drugs, and they're finding out, hey, I'm losing all my benefits from exercise because I'm taking this drug. A quarter of the population of the United States is taking metformin. Why don't you just change your diet,
dude?
Well, no, you got a bunch of obese people who don't want to change their diets because they were raised that way by their obese parents. Now, don't send me letters on this.
No, it's a fact. And the thing is, like, and I talked to my two buddies last night about it with sugar, and I was like, they were talking about, you know, doing a fast at the beginning of the year, detox, and I was massively encouraging of that. I think everybody needs to do a fast, whether you want to do just a water fast, whether you want to do the GHI cleanse fast, which I personally recommend the most. Depending on what your needs, do what you need to do best, because there's multiple types of fasts you can do. And I said one of the biggest things that fasts do that I absolutely love is, especially if you have an issue with sugar addiction, it breaks that. That's the biggest thing it does. And what happens is when you go to break the fast, break it with some eggs, and then just stop eating the sugar.
Breakfast is called break fast.
After 72 hours, your body starts massively cleaning itself out on a fast. Every 3 days, it has another detoxifying schedule on it. And so what happens is when you cut that carbs out, those refined sugars, like high fructose corn syrup, for at least 3 days, what happens is it starts to reset your body and reset your metabolism. If you can do it longer, you can do it longer. But get your body under control and stop eating so much sugar. Because the problem with it is it becomes insanely addictive. You pack on body fat. And the same thing is, you know, whether it's social media, cut off social media for a couple days or a week. Cut off certain things you're trying to do. If you're having an issue with depression, if you're having an issue with being down, if you're trying to get your receptors reset, like, you know, people, they used too many compounds when they were younger. That's also a problem. Make sure you're getting the proper amount of nutrients. That's why I like adding things like the Ultimate Multiple and the magnesium during a fast. I don't ever really recommend, nor have I do much. I've done them before. I don't do them anymore. Just a straight water fast. I'm talking no vitamins, no nothing, just water. I don't care for those because I like to increase my nutrient density while you're fasting and you're adding nutrients like the Ultimultiple powder, the magnesium brain food. It's allowing your body to detoxify at a much more accelerated rate and keeping your cells and mitochondria really strong. For example, here's another article here. It says magnesium depletion is linked to depression. How to replenish it effectively. This is a huge issue that we bring up all the time, and I hear this all the time with people, with magnesium brain food, on how it affects as far as the central nervous system, the dopamine, the serotonin. Magnesium is crucial. And I'll put this article in here. It says magnesium depletion score is a tool that helps identify people who may be low in magnesium by looking at common risk factors such as medications, alcohol use, kidney problems. Lowering your magnesium depletion score by improving your diet and increasing magnesium intake can prevent and ease symptoms of depression. They looked at 63,000 people in a meta-analysis published in Nutrition Reviews, and they looked at it and they saw it. Basically, the highest magnesium intake had a 34% lower risk of depression compared to those lower levels of intake. Remember, your body doesn't have a Xanax deficiency. Doesn't have a Prozac deficiency. In most cases, in my opinion, a lot of those pharmaceutical drugs and those SSRIs are not something that are needed unless you absolutely have to have them and try to exhaust every other option. It says magnesium regulates important brain cells involved in mood, such as glutamate and GABA. When levels are low, these systems become unbalanced. They make it harder to cope with stress and increase the risk of depression. This is also another reason, too, why the total rest, which we have GABA in, stacks so well to magnesium brain food. You run the magnesium brain food, the total rest, and the B-complex formula, or the Ultimultiple powder. Those are my three I love in the morning. Magnesium, you don't have to take the total rest at night either. You can take it in the morning, especially if you take the Ultimultiple powder. They have a synergistic effect with the B vitamins, the GABA, and the magnesium. And it'll really keep your mood going. It'll keep you frosty. It'll keep you pushing forward and really focus on the things that are positive. Because remember, a lot of the stuff with depression is mental, and a lot of it is nutrient deficiency that increases that issues. And so, again, another reason why you got to make sure you're getting magnesium.
If your brain doesn't have the right nutrients, it can't function right.
Same concept talked about.
No, and one of the side effects that I see with this, if a person starts getting depressed, and there's a lot of problems with people getting depressed, especially after traumatic brain injuries, after they fall, they hit their head, or even football players, and they can end up with bipolar disorder. When they end up with bipolar disorder, they can have all kinds of erratic mood swings. And then the problem is, even if they're taking supplements and trying to eat healthy and eat clean, the depression will cause them not to take their supplements anymore. The depression will cause them to start having mental problems as far as being in complaint of everything. This is why the Bible says, this is the day the Lord hath made. I will rejoice and I will be glad in it regardless of what happens. You've got to focus on the good stuff. You've got to train your brain to do that. Zig Ziglar taught me how to do that many years ago. You got to think about the positive aspect of your life. You can dwell on everything negative that ever happened to you for the rest of your life and live in the past. You can do that.
Oh, yeah.
And what it's going to do, it's going to destroy you, and it's going to destroy your brain function. And then you'll get so depressed, you won't even want to take your supplements anymore. You won't want to get out of bed in the morning. All you were going to do is sleep all the time, and you're going to spiral downhill. You know, I remember there was a speaker that came out years ago, and his wife and him were having health problems and, you know, marital problems and everything else. And she finally came out and said, well, the reason that I was having all these issues, I stopped looking at the good things about my husband. I only started dwelling on the negative things. Everybody's got their good and their bad stuff.
That's exactly right.
But we can dwell on all the negatives all the time.
Oh, it's easy to do so.
And you'll drive yourself nuts. And then when you stop taking your nutrients on top of that, or you have a blood sugar spike that you're going up and down,
exactly.
You're messing with, you know, all kinds of metformin and other kind of things, and now all of a sudden you're going hypoglycemic, now you feel low, you're going to get depressed. And so you got to avoid all of this stuff. And something that will really depress you is the last thing that just came out from the Israeli lobby. They're officially calling on Congress to repeal the First Amendment and establish a social credit dictatorship over America.
I saw that. One of the main intelligence guys.
The godfather of Israeli cyber command, Shlomo Kramer, says he backs Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to repeal the First Amendment, joining the left's calls to police free speech in America. Wait a minute.
Yep.
Remember, Israel just bought TikTok.
That's exactly right. And they own ChatGPT now.
You know, and I mean, so they're trying to tell us that we can't say anything like we've said this morning because it's against what they want. They've deemed it so. And now they want to repeal our First Amendment. See, other countries like Germany, they don't have a First Amendment.
No, they don't.
They start running your mouth in Germany.
Look at UK. Mm-hmm. The UK now has become notorious for arresting people for social media posts. I had a friend of mine the other day had the newest updated ChatGPT. Pretty crazy. Asked all kinds of stuff. And I'll give it credit. It actually was accurate about Ruby Ridge. I tested with Ruby Ridge as far as who was the sniper, shot Vicky Weaver. God rest her soul. That was a horrible incident. Everybody had to deal with that entire insane raid over ATF being completely out of control again. And they actually had it accurate. Here's the crazy part. So then I asked, tell me an American joke. I did the same thing as I saw this online. Tell me an American joke. It gives you like this soft, funny like American joke. So, okay, give me a German joke. So give me a German joke.
German joke. There are no German jokes.
Yeah. We don't joke. Yeah, exactly. Well, I said, okay, tell me a Jewish joke. Well, we're making sure we try not to make anybody upset or offend anybody. Wouldn't do it. Tell me an American joke. Tell me a German joke. Wouldn't tell me a Jewish joke. Here's the problem that I have with that. Why is it suddenly that there's this segment of the population, the entire world, that suddenly nobody can talk about, nobody can question, and nobody can joke about? The entire concept of comedic relief and jokes are the fact that sometimes you just kind of make fun of stuff because they're so ironic. But now we have a segment of the population that suddenly cannot be talked about in any time, shape, or form. I got a problem with that because you guys know we're all equal opportunist offenders here on the show. I'll whack everybody off if you give me enough time on here. And so, again, we start saying that a certain group can't be talked about. I got a real problem with that because I'm going to talk about it.
Well, you know, like let's talk about Goldman Sachs for a second. Now, they're coming in now with the Department of Defense, and they're going to own a bunch of stuff out of Venezuela, and they're going to fund it. Well, to me, when the government and the Department of Defense and industry combine together in equal force, that's fascism.
That is fascism.
I thought I'd mention that to you.
The private sector and the government are coming together.
Yeah, that's already there. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that's necessarily always a bad thing, because sometimes the government may have to regulate and control things, but that's what we saw happen in Germany in 1933.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you start getting other countries involved, and all of a sudden you have this global governance through fascism. And you think, well, you know, is Goldman Sachs really going to own? Yeah, this is Goldman Sachs.
What do you think BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard are going to do? Mm-hmm. They've already had this planned up for a very, very long period of time. Also, to another topic here, goes in, I brought this up numerous times, another study once again says heavy screen use and problematic behaviors feed into each other. Studies find children often turn to screens as coping mechanisms for anxiety, depression, social difficulties. Spending too much time on screens causes harm and symptoms of underlying problem. That's why I tell you guys, if kids at a certain age need to get a phone for some reason, they're going to be running around, they're going to be doing stuff, make sure you're getting them these phones they make now with no internet access and no social media platforms on them. And I don't mean like, oh, I've got my parental guide has it turned off, or I've ever restricted on what they can access. You need to have a full disconnected internet on there. They can basically call or text. That's all they need to have on there, because there's always ways around this stuff to get access to the internet. Kids are sneaky. They'll try to find passcodes. They'll try to go to parental guidelines. If it doesn't exist on the phone because they're making the phone without it, I think Gab is a new one that came out now that's pretty good that makes it. And there's a few other ones. When you start allowing these kids to get on these social media platforms for hours on end and scroll and see stuff, even if it's not, you know, horrific or nefarious topics, it constantly, A, it burns out their dopamine entirely too early because they're getting these constant hits all the time instead of actually doing
that. That's like the Molly does, the crystal.
Exactly. It's basically drugs like that for young kids is how it affects their brain with social media. And it looks right here. It says studies tracked children aged 10 and under over time and found that screen time, specifically on social media and internet, led to severe socio-emotional problems. And socio-emotional problems led to increased screen time. I mean, it was a vicious cycle. The more they were on the screen, the more emotional problems they had, the more they could not regulate their emotions, and the more they couldn't regulate their emotions, the more they went on the screen time to try to get dopamine hits. Then they had more emotional problems, and it turned into a giant cycle.
Feedback loop.
Feedback loop, because what happens is they're constantly starving for dopamine. They're getting so much. So, because remember, when children are young, their brains are fresh. They haven't been polluted with so many things yet, unless they've had the same amount of vaccines. Their body's dopamine receptors are enormous. They suck it in. Their body produces enormous amounts of it.
It's part of how their brain develops.
How they develop. And it gives them that reward complex when they got to do something. Oh, I built a tree fort today. Oh, I built a new bicycle ramp. Or whatever it may be, their body gets a massive dopamine hit off of it because they're accomplishing something. They have a job to do. They're going watering magnolia trees twice a week. They're getting a job done. They're getting positive reinforcement from the brain. That social media platforms massively overstimulate those platforms because they're not doing anything productive. They're sitting there, scroll, scroll, scroll. They're using a finger and getting huge dopamine hits like a doper, like a drugger, like a cranker. And so they start getting addicted to it, and it causes all these emotional problems because they can't regulate what's happening.
And that's why you see them at the dinner table, and they have to give them an iPad because they don't all. If they don't get the iPad, all hell breaks
they
loose.
They fall. I've watched it.
They're just screaming.
I've watched.
Pissy fit falling on the floor screaming.
I've watched 3- and 4-year-olds. I mean, toddlers, not babies, toddlers have complete full-blown hysterical meltdowns because their iPad died on them.
Well,
watch the one time.
They're addicts.
That's exactly what happened. They literally acted like they were crack addict.
Oh, by the way, you know, Iran is in trouble now. Iran's got it's very unstable, too. Okay?
Yeah.
And Mossad is over there going berserk. Because remember, I hate to say this. I mean, they're Arabs, right? And the Jews and the Arabs kind of look alike. Don't send me letters. They're all, if they're Semites, they're Semites.
They hate each other.
Well, they do. But they're kind of relatives.
I don't figure that out. Like, y'all are blood brothers at some point.
Isaac and Ishmael. Go back and
read those old testaments. Calm down with the nonsense.
Ex-CIA boss hits that the involvement of Israeli intel, Mossad, in the Iranian protest. There's no surprise here.
No.
Former U.S. Secretary of State CIA boss Mike Pompeo has voiced support for ongoing anti-government protests in Iran while suggesting that intelligence operatives in Tehran and arch-rival Israel are involved in the unrest. The protest described as the worst in recent years erupted last weekend amid hyperinflation in Iran. That's what they're trying to prevent here by taking over the oil reserves,
exactly,
going
right
back to the petrodollar. They could probably kick this thing down the road another 10 years.
They will with that. That's what Jeff told me the other day. He said the whole thing with the petrodollar and the U.S. dollar just got real stable real fast yesterday.
Well, yeah,
it's going to do that.
It says the Iranian regime is in trouble. Riots in dozens of cities under siege. You know, basically all over Iran right now. And now the Iranian president, the Ayatollah Khomeini, is actually wanting to leave and flee to Russia, according to some research that I looked at. Now, whether that's true or not, I have no idea. A lot of times they want to say this stuff and create a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's exactly right.
You know, although he'll be running to Russia, he reads the paper, goes, "Oh, I'm running to Russia. I didn't know that. Oh, that's not a bad idea."
Psychological operations,
baby. Unbelievable. But, you know, it's just. But here's the article. Silver, Department of War to build metal refineries in a blow to China. Financed by J.P. Morgan, jointly owned by the U.S. Department of Defense. So I mentioned it just earlier. Under the plan, the U.S. Department of Defense will hold a 40% stake in the JPM-financed smelter joint venture for metals here in the U.S. as far as controlling the cost of silver for their AI data centers to basically create a hive mind around the entire planet. The project known as the U.S. Smelter is expected to require approximately $6.6 billion in capital expenditures, with total investment reaching $7.4 billion, including financing costs. It'll be much higher than that. It's being developed in coordination with the U.S. Department of War and the U.S. Department of Commerce, according to the project materials and government statements. How about that? Welcome to the road to fascism.
This is going to fascism.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that's going to be a bad thing in some areas, but the reality. No, don't quote me on that. Ted just said we should be under fascist government. I never said that. I just said if you're going to have to stabilize your currency with gold and silver and everything else, and with petrodollars and with oil, you better do it in a way that's going to benefit everybody in that country. Period. You know, I mean, I remember when Hitler came in back in the 30s, and he got rid of the Rothschild banking cartel dollar, the German mark over there, and he started printing debt-free currency. It stabilized Germany, and Germany became an industrial powerhouse and pretty much fought World War II without borrowing any money from the Rothschild banks. And when he did that, he started hammering in his Nuremberg rallies and everything else, Austin, the international bankers and who they were. He ended up basically had a target put on him.
Oh, yeah.
Now, remember, Hitler had the same deal that Maduro had. Don't quote me on this because I'm just speaking very loosely here. He was told, basically, according to Jim Mars, who wrote the book, The Fourth Reich, he was told that if he were to give the nuclear advanced technology to the United States government, that he'd be taken away safely, according to Mars. And Mars even said, he went another step. He said that the bombs that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki weren't ours. They were German bombs. And if you watch the movie Oppenheimer, they couldn't get our detonators to work. Remember that, Austin?
Yep.
But all of a sudden, the detonators started working, and they started producing nuclear weapons, at least two of them. And a lot of people say that those two weapons were actually produced by Germany and dropped by the United States. Now, that's all speculation, according to that author. I have no idea what happened there. All I know is this. We sure had a lot of technology developed really, really fast back in the 30s and the 40s. I will say that. And all of a sudden, we started going into a whole different world with nuclear energy. So the reality is that, you know, Hitler, in my opinion, he never committed suicide. In fact, they know now the body, where they've done an autopsy on it. Now, not an autopsy, but a DNA test on it. It was a female, not a male. And so we know that Germany basically, you know, had Hitler, and Hitler basically left Germany, but he cut a deal to get out and not be killed. And he lived the rest of his life out in Argentina, according to multiple witnesses that were down there. Now, so is that what Maduro did? I don't know. But all of this stuff plays out behind the scenes in ways that we can't understand because we're not given the information. It's like Solzhenitsyn said, we know they're lying. They know they're lying. We know that they know that they're lying. And they know that we know that they know that they're lying. But they don't care. They just keep lying about everything.
Well, it would have been an absolute, I mean, it would have been absolutely useless for Maduro to put a massive fight.
No,
right. There was no.
It would never want to have killed a bunch of civilians, and it would have destroyed infrastructure, and that would not have stabilized the dollar as quickly.
Exactly.
Think about that.
Right, because it would have destabilized it, because everybody would have wondered what's going to happen now.
And if they stop producing oil down there, completely stop. Suddenly, the spike is everything's in hyperinflation.
Yes. So think about it for a second. We have a weekend.
That was on the weekend.
That was on the weekend. Did it on the weekend. All the infrastructure now can be expanded and rebuilt. There's no infrastructure damage. He's pulled out nice and smooth and clean. Boop. Now, immediately, Donald Trump puts out a tweet and says, we're not going to control Venezuela now for months until we figure out what to do.
It's going to be for years.
That's what he's saying. It'll never stop. We will never get out of Venezuela now. We will roam Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And so it was super clean, super smooth, super tight. Markets are really flat today as far as not going crazy. Nothing's destabilized. And now the petrodollar is going to start going back.
We could always just make them our 51st state. We have so many Venezuelans here anyhow.
Unless actual play they do. We'll be 52nd now, Puerto Rico, or 53rd.
Whatever.
We're moving. So,
yeah, but you know, and all these women, all these people that are from Venezuela on protected status, you know, a lot of them want to send them back. That one guy you were talking about in Florida who's running, was it Fishbone or whatever his name is?
Yeah, I'll pull up more information on tomorrow.
And I forgot his name, but he basically is saying we should send all the Venezuelans back now. But quite frankly, the Venezuelans are some of the hardest working people I've ever seen.
The crew that I had for my house, my subs that I used for my shop and everything were great. So, guys, if you need anything, you know where to get a hold of us. On the site, if you want to look at it, the blood sugar body fat burning stack, that's the cinnamon and the berberine, really good at stabilizing blood sugar, getting insulin sensitivity where it needs to be, and healthy glucose levels. If you really want to take it a step on the third pack, we have the ultimate fat burn kit, which is the cinnamon extract, berberine, and the Pro Cut Core that I get out of Switzerland.
That's a strong stack.
That's a stack if you want to melt body fat like butter in a microwave. That's the stack, especially if you cut down on your food intake and you cut down on refined carbs. It's impossible. I've never seen anybody not be able to burn body fat with a clean diet in that stack. So two options there for you, the blood sugar and body fat burning stack or the ultimate fat burn kit, both on the site. Probably sent some emails this week for a lot of people that have questions on that. Have an awesome, blessed evening, my friends. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your emails. We'll talk to you again on this show tomorrow, as always.
Got to pray for you guys in church yesterday. Always remember to keep your hearts and minds in Jesus all the days of your life. You guys are awesome. Thank you for your support. Thank you for your prayers. And thank you for kind of putting up with our antics a little bit. I mean, I love you guys. And if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you guys.